Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
A former Central College president helped define Division III sports in terms of both athletics and academics, and helped usher in a new era in women's athletics. What are his thoughts on his career and on life? Let's go in depth with Ken Weller, retired president of Central College, Pella. Ken, where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Holland, Michigan. I was born and raised there, and then I went to the Navy, and then I got out of the Navy. I went to Hope College and graduated from Hope College and started teaching at Hope College 1 year after I graduated. So I was connected there for about, for the first 40 years of my life, and then I was 20 years at Central, and now I've been retired for another period of about 20 years. So my life, you multiply all those out, 4 times 21, you come close to my age.
And where did you serve in the, you said the Navy?
In the Navy, yes.
All right,
yes.
And so where did you serve?
I was trained as an electronic technician, and I served on Guam, but it was after the war was finished. I was one of those very, very unusual persons that was clearly ticketed to go in the invasion of Japan. And I was trained and graduated from school, and then we had the atomic bomb situation, and we had that very, very difficult decision. But when people say that you certain number of people were saved by an act that also killed a certain number of people, I was one of those people that's probably here only because that's what Truman finally decided to do. So it's an agonizing decision, but there are people that really were very much in the middle of that.
You were one of them.
Yep.
What did that feel like?
Well, I don't think we really appreciated at that time the horror of nuclear bombing, and so that I felt good. But I did not ever, until later, get to the point of balancing the fact that there were some other people that are gone that paid the price that made it possible for me to be here. So I've grown to feel differently as time has gone by, and I've become aware of what a difficult situation it is to try to weigh the life of one person against the life of another, or the life of one person against the lives of a number of people. Why, it impressed me over the years.
Well, and then you came back and you became an economist. Is that right?
Well, yes, that's true. I actually started school as an engineer. And those are the days when they were just starting to make sure that engineers got a liberal arts core. And I graduated from high school at 17, so I was able to start college, and I went all year long for 1 year. But in that process, I did take a course in economics and found that I enjoyed it a lot more than I did some of the engineering courses. So whether I became an economist, I don't know. I have a degree in economics and business, but all of the connotations that go with a title like that in this day and age, you're not so sure you want to admit it.
It and then your business background influenced your career from then on out.
Yeah, that's right. And the other aspect of my academic career was that I was a football coach during the same 21 years that I taught economics and business. And it was an interesting combination, the two of them. I found to be a very rewarding thing. I have often said that even when I became a college president, I felt that I was a teacher who was taking on some administrative duties in my latter years. Not the other way around, which is so often the case, that you're a president who was once a teacher, if you can make that distinction. I feel whatever successes I had as a college president were in significant measure due to the fact that I was really a teacher at heart.
A teacher and coach.
Yes, right, yes.
And do you see a distinction there?
Surprisingly, not much. I feel that the real function of a coach is teaching. And adding to the teaching process the relational aspects of academic life, I feel it's easier for a coach to get into a really effective relationship than it is for a professor. But I found in both cases that I had a considerable amount of success and sense of accomplishment by relating to people, and it happened in both places. And I guess that gets me to a point where I would say that I do not separate them quite as much as other people might do. I have a feeling that athletics really are a part of education. And I have felt that very strongly over the years, and I've had some situations in which I have actually had an opportunity to put that to work. But I think that the way that you justify athletics is not to entertain the spectator, but to influence the life of the participants. And that really is the essence of what Division III seeks to do, teaches. It's concerned with the growth and the development of young people, and in that process you work very, very, very hard to combine both athletics and the academic classroom work together to create a wholeness about the educational process that I think is very, very healthy. And for me, as a very average performer in athletics, was extremely important to me. And all those years that I taught in the classroom, teaching as a professor, were all the same years that I was coaching. And that's a pretty rare combination in colleges.
Now, isn't that hearkening back to the Platonic ideal, the physical and the mental, all of it being?
Yeah, I think so, yes, it does. But it's quite at odds with much of the athletic world today in terms of big-time athletics and colleges, in which the essence of what it is to is for the spectator more than it is for what it does for the athlete. You don't have to have a 100,000-seat stadium to influence the lives of the participants, but you have it because of what it does for spectators and entertainment and so forth.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you help bring these ideals into the formation of Division III sports?
That's correct. Yeah, it is. I was very fortunate at one point when I. After I had been a college president for a number of years, I went through the traditional chairs of doing the work outside of the college, the Iowa Colleges Foundation, the Iowa Association of Private Colleges. I served my duty there, and I reached a point and I said, what is it really that I might do outside for a broader impact? I realized that there weren't many people that had the experience that I had coaching, and so I made a rather conscious, deliberate decision that I would try to move into the governance process for athletics, and did at that time, and I wrote some things about athletics and education and. Ultimately, I drafted the philosophy statement of what Division III was all about and went through the political process of getting adopted and getting it created. And I believe that it was work well done. It had a good result. Not that I did it well, but that it had a good impact. And it sustained, I think, the ideal of the educational athletic combination, integration, it sustained it through a period in which Division 1A and the big-time athletic programs were straying considerably away from the academic aspect. The student-athlete, as they were often called, were much more athletes than students.
Well, on that, legacy is playing itself out still today in Division III sports, isn't it?
That's correct. I think so, although it's not nearly as Simon Pure as the philosophy would indicate. There are places that distort it and don't. There are some places, for example, that are willing to try to follow the rules, but really don't follow the philosophy. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing that this reminds me of is that there are many very large schools that do not give athletic scholarships and therefore follow the rules in significant measure, but operate their programs like a small version of Division I, and that doesn't fit very well. When Division III was created, in the beginning, it was defined exclusively as not giving financial aid to athletes above need. And it still is defined as, in the minds of most people, that Division III is where they don't give scholarships. Now, that doesn't really capture what it's all about. The fact that you don't define something in terms of what it doesn't do, you define what it does do. And I think it's at that point that these things that I've been talking about with you are we've tried to figure out what is it we're trying to do with athletics. And it's tried to educate young people, and it's tried to be a part of that process. It's not defined simply by creating programs that don't give scholarships. But we're moving from a negative description of what you don't do into a positive description of what you're trying to do for young people, that you get into the whole aspect of the Division III philosophy. Not very well understood, I don't think, by the general public.
I've been told before that you helped pioneer women's sports, bringing them great success as well.
That's right. I did. When I decided to go into the NCAA, I worked on Division III, but then I also was on the task force that was assigned the opportunity and the difficulty of integrating women into athletics. And I was just very, very lucky to be there, but I really feel that I was in the decision-making process of something that is a major determinant of cultural change in our society in the last 25, 30 years. It's really remarkable. Remarkable thing how rapidly and how well women took to the opportunity of participating in athletics. And I was in the committee where there were two Division III members on that task force, and it was a very controversial thing that there was a lot of anger and I think resentment and criticism of the existing situation, it was. Some of the bigger schools and represented by football coaches who were concerned about what was going to happen to the revenue that they were bringing in, and that's of course a Division I issue. But the thing was, it was a very, very challenging thing. The whole thing is a very interesting story. That there were some people, women who rightly were insisting on the fact that men and women are equal, and if you're going to have equal, you ought to have just as many people in the organization and in the management of athletics as there are men and women ought to be equal. And there was a real difficulty working through that. The rancor and anger that took place in that task force was really a matter of not whether you were for or against women's athletics. Almost everyone there was for the introduction and involvement of women in athletics, but it was a question of how it was to be done. And the tensions arose where women seeking to get greater involvement and saying logically, we ought to have, if you've got 25 members of the board of trustees of the NCAA, and they ought to have 12 and a half each. But ultimately, the thing was resolved. And as a matter of fact, I wrote the proposal, which got past that very, very difficult thing by saying that the number of women that would be raised to positions within the NCAA itself would be based upon the number of participants, number of women participating, and the number of men participating. And, of course, the number of men was much larger. So it was a simple rule to get past that issue. And I think that most people would agree that in terms of the organization itself, the NCAA was faster and more effective than almost any other major national educational association in involving women in the actual operation of the organization. They did it very, very quickly, and they did it very well, and the women responded and did well. And I think it was a very, very major accomplishment.
Well, you almost have to be of a certain age to remember what a major societal shift this was. Young people, in all likelihood, don't understand this.
No, that's true. It's the older people who remember women's athletics. I can remember very well that they would have a play day, and they'd get a few people from different schools, and they'd get together, and they'd probably not keep score, and it was just a kind of a recreational thing. But in terms of organized athletics, there was very, very little of it, except in Iowa. And I don't think it's an accident that Division III impetus to do this came from Iowa, where we had six-on-six basketball, and where we had softball, and athletics in Iowa for women were much more advanced than they were in almost any other place around. And that's where some of the hardcore promotional enthusiasm came to get women involved on the competitive athletic scene.
Now, we focus primarily on the athletic side of your career. How about the academic side? What do you think are some of your major academic successes where you helped usher Central into today?
I think that the international programs are a thing that distinguishes our college from almost every other college. Less today than they were 10, 15, 20 years ago. But we moved on the area of overseas studying abroad for students in a very aggressive way that was really quite remarkable. And that was begun before I came, but most of it was built after I came here. And I was of a mind that I came because I thought it was a good idea and I wanted to build it. I didn't have any ego problems of saying it isn't all mine. And it has been very good, and I think it has been picked up, and more schools are doing it. But give the opportunity to young people to study abroad it accelerates maturation. It's a fancy way of saying they grow up when they're independent and they have to do it. And I remember a kid saying in a movie one time, a promotional movie, it said something to the effect that It's 11 o'clock at night, and you're in Vienna, Austria, without a place to stay. What are you going to do? And that's the sort of things that young people learn to deal with. And I think that is an aspect of Central's contribution that has been set the pace for many other places now that are getting involved in it.
Now, you've had some time to reflect since you've retired, and we don't really get to pick our legacy. We don't get to decide what people think about us. But if you had an opportunity to determine how you would like to be remembered at Central and in Pella and in Iowa, how would you like to be remembered?
I think My feeling would be that I'd like to be remembered about as a person who cared about students and what happened to them and how they grew and how people worked together. I was never a college president on a white horse. I was a consensus builder, and I cared about people, and I'd like to be remembered about a person who was not an authoritarian type of person, but that was a builder of consensus and builder of community. I think that's an achievement for people in almost any field that they're looking at. Building community is where the success comes.
And you get to give one bit of advice to an entering Central student. What bit of advice would you give them?
I'd advise them to be open. To be open to new ideas and new opportunities. I think it's a marvelous time of life to be able to make choices that will determine your future, and to take them seriously, and to see the opportunities that are inherent in what they do. And I would always urge them to think in terms of serving other people.
Thanks to Ken Weller for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.